Armed American Radio listeners, today's Armed American Radio's recorded version of the national radio broadcast, the Armed American Radio podcast, is being brought to you today and every day by North American Arms. Make sure to visit NorthAmericanArms.com for the finest mini revolvers on planet Earth. NorthAmericanArms.com. Enjoy the show.
Is Armed American Radio.
If they want to take my guns, they're going to have to bring a station wagon and a whole lot of friends because I'm not giving them anything.
From the Carr Firearms Group studio
at the Patriot Mobile Communication Center
on the Sig Sauer Platinum microphone.
Mark, we know they want to take our guns, and now we're going to make them eat it.
Proudly presented to you by X Insurance.
X Insurance. X Insurance.
Here is your host of Armed American Radio, the loudest conservative voice in America fighting for your rights, Mark Walters.
And here we go. It is a Sunday. That means we are going to be talking about your gun rights today in the Carr Firearms Group studios here. Mark Walters in front of the Sig Sauer powerful and platinum microphone at the Patriot Mobile Communication Center. Every single moment being brought to you by the great X Insurance. Greg in Dallas, Texas, how you doing?
Doing pretty well.
Would you be kind enough, sir, to tell people where to watch the program in high definition and participate in the chat, which is very active? And ladies and gentlemen, please don't do that if you're driving. I want to throw that public service announcement out. Greg, take it away.
The chat is currently more active than Mark is, so if you'd like to head on over and watch the show, head on over to armedamericanradio.org or .com. On the right-hand side of that website, you're going to see the menu icon. Just give it a click, and when that window opens up, select that Watch Live option. If you're driving, hit that Listen Live link, and if you need to get caught up on anything you may have missed, well, hit that podcast link if you want to join our live chat. All you have to do is head on over to your app store, grab the Telegram messaging app, create your profile, and search for Armed American Radio Conversations.
Greg is referring to my broken knee. I literally have a broken knee. I was talking to a doctor friend of mine right before airtime, and I said, this is really hurting me bad. He goes, well, have a great show. It'll start to heal up soon, I promise. Get a heavier brace for it. And by the way, tonight, break a leg. And I said, there you go, Doc. Thanks for that. He goes, just inside doctor information for you. There you go. The great Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation, joins us now. Alan, how the heck are you? I hope you don't have a broken leg.
I'm doing fine, Mark, but I wish your pain would go away. You're in my prayers.
Thank you so much. Believe me, it's vicious. Alan, there's other pain out there, too. Before I get into some of the press releases and some of the great things happening in Louisiana, South Carolina, and the great work that the Second Amendment Foundation is doing, shall we start with the Biden State of the Union? It took him a while to get to our guns, saying that he could do what he wants to do without violating the Second Amendment. Of course, they tell us they don't want to take away our guns, and Joe Biden said he wants to ban our guns. So he went there. We knew he would. Were you surprised by anything at the State of the Union, not just the gun portion?
Well, let me talk about the gun portion because that's what I do. You know, when he talked about he's not violating Second Amendment rights, he supports the Second Amendment, and in the same breath, he wants to ban guns. I don't understand how banning guns supports the Second Amendment. I mean, I know he's senile, but he's taken this position for like many, many years. It really bothers me. What really bothered me more was his overall theme of restoring the right to choose and protect other freedoms, not take them away, quote unquote. Well, you know, when it comes to gun rights, he's more than happy to take them away. You know, he boasted about his creating his Office for Gun Violence Prevention, was the first ever White House Office of Gun Control and Citizen Disarmament is what it really is. And suddenly disguised the bureaucracy, the only purpose function, you know, is to lobby for more restrictive gun laws. So, and once he doesn't tell the truth, you know, here I am supporting the Second Amendment and here I am taking your guns away. I think he thinks we're kind of stupid, and we're not. And gun owners are going to show up in the polls, and obviously gun owners are not going to vote for Joe Biden.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm like you. I saw it. It did. You know, ladies and gentlemen, you're probably a lot like me. I would imagine you are. But I have a spouse that said, I'll sit here and watch this with you, but you have to be quiet. I don't want you coming out of your chair. And Alan, honestly, I didn't come out of my chair because I expected what I heard, right? But at the same time, the partisan nature of the speech when it got to guns surprised me a little bit. Not that he went to guns, but just the partisan nature of the speech. It was a campaign speech. I'd never seen a State of the Union quite like that, and I know I'm not alone.
Yeah,
a lot of the
pundits. It was not a State of the Union address. It was a campaign speech, and I think he knows he has to make it because he knows he's losing. There's no choice about it. I also, Mark, didn't appreciate sort of like being yelled at. I constantly felt like I was being yelled at and being scolded. That's not a way to win people over. And again, this is a president who talked about how he's going to bring everybody together. Well, unless you own a firearm, then he wants to destroy you.
Yeah, well, I caught the same thing you did. I didn't appreciate being yelled at. You know, I certainly were not alone, Alan. Millions and millions of Americans felt the same way. Did you sense desperation from Biden?
You know, it very well may have been desperation. I also honestly really believe he was hyped up on something because he spoke faster than he's ever spoken in his life. It was actually hard for me to understand the run-on words a little bit because he was speaking so fast. They gave him something to give him some energize him, so to speak. And I'm not sure that played out so well, but he came across, honestly, as an angry old man.
Yeah, and people noticed it. It was noticed by everybody on both sides of the aisle. Of course, they're going to say one thing on the partisan side of the aisle, and et cetera. But, yeah, I think millions of Americans caught what you picked up on as well. Let's go to Duttelbach and the ATF. Now, this has been something I've talked about all week, Alan. I didn't get a chance to talk with you about it last Sunday, so I want to bring it up now. Did you happen to see the 2 minute and 21 second clip of CBS's Face the Nation with Duttelbach and his supposed firearms expert?
I saw clips of it. I didn't watch it live, but I saw clips of it on the internet afterwards.
What does the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation think when the ATF is scaring millions of Americans with firearms, comparing them to fully automatic weapons, et cetera? They had a M60 saw belt-fed weapon there that was just there for scary looks. They didn't even talk about it. And when the firearms expert at the ATF couldn't even dismantle a Glock, which is something my kids can do and reassemble it probably within a minute, both of them. What's with the ATF? What are we supposed to think when we see this nonsense?
Well, if you're a gun owner and familiar with firearms, you know it was total nonsense. Problem is, if you're not a gun owner, you know, and you get scary pictures and yet have people you don't know they're not handling firearms properly, well, then it's another story. But as a gun owner, involved with the Second Amendment Foundation, the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, I had a hard time watching the clips I saw on the internet.
It was, I'll just say, it was kind of cringy. But at the same time, I'm going to take your statement just a tad bit further. They were successful in scaring millions of Americans, Alan. They were.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Let's be honest. There's millions of people out there that are ignorant, just like you mentioned, and it worked, didn't it? It had to a certain extent. Let's just be honest.
I think you're probably right, Mark. Unfortunately, I'll have to agree with you.
So I guess this is why we talk about these things, ladies and gentlemen. It's why we have Armed American Radio, to quote John Lott. It's why Alan does what Alan does. It's why Tom Gresham does what he does. It's why tons of great podcasters and other radio shows do what they do. And it's why John said he writes op-eds. Alan, this is the only machine and types of mechanisms that we have to hit back at this type of reporting. The CBS reporter, I don't even remember her name, she did an absolutely horrible job and let them get away with everything they wanted to get away with. And it was quite frightening to see a weaponized ATF right before our very eyes.
Yeah,
it really was scary.
Mark, there's also a story this week by Associated Press, an Associated Press writer who I've dealt with for a number of years now, and she's never exactly what I'm going to say is fair, but she usually gets the opposing opinion in there for like one line. But they did this story about how, you know, the automatic weapons flooding America right now because people can easily buy parts and convert guns, in less than a minute to be fully automatic. And it was a story that was just totally off the wall, quoting a lot of our anti-gun lobbyist people. Never had anybody on our side to clean it up, even to talk about how inaccurate it was. How these things can fire 600-800 bullets per minute. And it was again part of the scare tactics. And I'm noticing over the last couple of weeks, significant more scare tactics on guns coming from our opponents. They must have some polling or focus group data to show that the scaring people can work.
Well, the CBS report was likely evidence of that. And as much as I hate to admit, as I just did, it likely did work, at least for a large portion of the electorate who is unknown, who is ignorant and has no knowledge of what it is they're looking at. And oh, there's the director of the ATF and there's their expert. It's pretty scary stuff to those folks. So, yeah, sadly, the problem, Alan, is I agree with you on this. I'll go a step further. I don't believe we're going to see our side brought to the table by the media, particularly because it's an election year. They're going to continue to drive that narrative as hard as they can. Take us to the break with that.
You are 100% correct about that. We're seeing it coming out now very heavily, and I expect it to continue. I don't even get invited anymore basically to any of the, TV yeah. talk shows or any radio talk shows by our opponents. They only want their side on, and they never put our side on at all.
Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to a break. We've got Alan for one more segment. I want to talk to him about some of the press releases that the Second Amendment Foundation has put out along with the Citizens Committee. And I want to ask you to join SAF at saf.org. $15 for an annual membership, $150 for a life membership. Join us and help us fight these fights. We'll be back with Alan. One more segment. Don't go away. The following segment of Armed American Radio's Daily Defense is being brought to you by Patriot Mobile. Visit patriotmobile.com/AAR and use the AAR promo code to get free activation today. Welcome back to the show. Wow, welcome back to the show indeed. Carr Firearms Group Studios are lit up for you here. Sig Sauer Mike, Mark Walters, filling your prescription for freedom on said microphone. Heading into 15 years, ladies and gentlemen, April 26th is our 15th year. We're going to have a great show lined up for you, some surprise guests, I'm sure. All of it coming to you from the Patriot Mobile Command and Communication Center. X Insurance presents this program every single day. Please go out of your way to visit all of our partners. You can find them at armedamericanradio.com. We'll talk about some of them individually as we move through the show today. Let's go back to the great Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. Alan, let's talk about some fun stuff. So the last couple years have seen quite the movement relative to constitutional carry. Georgia, Louisiana, now South Carolina. Let's start or Florida. Let's start now with Louisiana. Our good friend, as you know, A.W.R. Hawkins, was standing behind Governor Landry when the bill was signed. He got himself one of those little pens. That's pretty cool stuff. I guess my question is, now South Carolina goes, 2 days later, which honestly I wasn't expecting. Do we go? Now we're at 29. What do we have going forward? Is North Carolina next, or does it come to a screeching halt, do you think, looking at the makeup of the states that are left?
Well, we're only going to get a few more states because the blue states are never going to go with us.
Right.
But we will pick up a few more. But 29 is absolutely amazing. It's great to know in 29 states you don't have to get a permit to exercise your constitutional right. We've come a long way, baby, and we should be proud of it.
Absolutely. Did you ever think you'd see this over the last 5 years move as fast as it has?
If I had to take a guess from, 5-6 years ago, I would say we would have half the states we got now. So we're running well ahead of schedule.
That's good news. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move on to some press releases now from the Second Amendment Foundation. This came out on the 4th, just 6 days ago. Attorneys representing the Second Amendment Foundation and its partners have filed a motion for summary judgment with the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of where? New York, seeking a final resolution to its lawsuit challenging New York state and municipal laws prohibiting private citizens from possessing and using stun guns and tasers. And Adam Kraut, the executive director, said this: given New York's history of wanting to keep its peaceable citizens defenseless, it comes as no surprise they would remain an outlier in having a ban which prohibits people from owning electronic arms. Okay, here we go. It's New York again. What's up with this? And tell people, if you would, please, what is a motion for summary judgment? Would you explain that?
A motion for summary judgment asks the court to immediately give you a judgment against the law, making it unconstitutional until it's fully litigated, based on the fact that you have prevalence to win and there are people that are deprived of their rights currently. And so you have to be able to match those two things to be able to get that. And this judge obviously believes we're going to win and people are being denied their rights right now. So, yeah, you know, what the interesting thing to me is that in New York, you think would allow stun guns because they're not lethal. And hence, if more people had stun guns, maybe in New York's mind, so to speak, there'd be less people with you know, real firearms. But no, they don't. There's no common sense there at all, even from their own point of view.
That's actually a great way to look at it. I wasn't viewing it that way. But yeah, I think you're absolutely correct about that. Let's move on now to the 8th, just a couple days ago, Second Amendment Foundation. SAF files respondent's brief to SCOTUS in frame and receiver case. This is the Vanderstock v. Garland case that's been around for a while, and SAF is joined by Defense Distributed, Polymer 80, et cetera. But this, the brief recalls how Congress enacted the Gun Control Act of 1968 pursuant to the Commerce Clause with no intention of discouraging or eliminating the private ownership or use of firearms by law-abiding citizens for lawful purposes. Now, let's kind of pivot over to Dettelbach and the proliferation of the phrase ghost guns during his 2.5-minute fright night over fright morning, I should say, over at CBS Face the Nation. Is that what we're talking about here, is the ghost gun?
Well, that's what they'd like to call it. We like to call it the right of an individual to be able to make their own firearm in their own home for their own self-protection, which has been a constitutional right since the founding of the Republic. And there's obviously no historical analogy to say that that was ever, you know, banned, you know, in the United States at all by anybody ever. And so, you know, again, they try to get around it with fright night things like ghost guns, to be able to try and, you know, move things in their direction. But this isn't going to matter because, you know, nowhere can they show any historical anything about ghost guns because, they, you know, they don't exist, so to speak, in it's a figment of their imagination. This is the brief is really great. And I'd like to urge your listeners to go to SAF.org and go to the news release section for the filing of the respondent's brief to SCOTUS in the frame and receiver case, you know, Vanderstock, and click on the link, the hot link in there, and actually read the brief. It's very educational, and it shows how right we are.
Alan, let's stay on the quote-unquote, and I'll use their phrase because people out there, if you're on the other side of the aisle, you have heard the term, and I'm going to try to convince you otherwise. A ghost gun is nothing more than a home build, period. Alan, has it ever been illegal to build a firearm at home since the founding of this nation?
I have not found anything or anybody even proposing that in the history of our country up until recent times when you've got trying to ban any kind of firearm they can ban, using any kind of tactic they can by renaming things and changing the definitions of what a firearm even is.
This is, Alan is on the same page as me. This is where I was going with, because this is why the bump stock case is so important, ladies and gentlemen, because it deals not necessarily with bump stocks, but it deals with the government's ability to change the name and the definition of something. And if they can get away with it there, they can get away with it here. But aren't they attempting to use the same tactics as they did with bump stock, change the definition, move the goalposts in the middle of the game decades down the road so that they can enforce the rules they want there want to over at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Expletives, as I call them? And isn't that how these two cases tie together, along with pistol braces, et cetera? I mean, this is critical stuff, Alan.
Yes, it is. You know, they have no authority from Congress. Congress defined what a gun is and what the regulations could be with regard to firearms. They can't just make up their own administrative, you know, actions outside having authority from Congress. And this is what this administration does. So they talk about, you know, democracy or protecting freedom. It only applies to things they want to protect. If they want to challenge it or take it away, the rule book doesn't apply anymore.
It never does. They'll make up the rules as they go. Again, ladies and gentlemen, these people will tell you at midnight the sun is shining, and they'll do it with a straight face. Biden did it on Thursday night this past week. If you watched, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, the Bruin decision makes it very clear the historical context is critical. The bump stock case, if Michael Cargill wins the bump stock case, Alan, does that put to bed the 80% rule? We've got about 30 seconds.
No, this frame and receiver rule sort of, you know, does that. You got frame and receivers, the bump stock, and a couple others where the Administrative Procedures Act has been violated by this administration, right, and they're trying to redefine things, and it helps. Well, the foundation of three of these different lawsuits are going to win it for us.
Absolutely. Alan Gottlieb, founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. I wish we had 4 hours with you every single day. Thank you so much, Alan, for bringing your wit and wisdom to the program every single week and for everything that you do on our behalf at the Second Amendment Foundation. Join us, ladies and gentlemen, saf.org. And let's all work together to put an end to this nonsense. Alan has got the operation in place. Join us. $15 a year. We'll be back. Stephen Gutowski from The Reload.
To the AFT.
The voice of reason on KQAM, Wichita's Big Talker, and you're tuned into the Armed American Radio Network. Now let's get back to the man himself, Mark Walters.
And here we are. Yes, we're going to flip it right over here in the Carr Firearms Group studios. Welcome back. Sig Sauer, Mike lit up for you. I am Mark Walters, filling your prescription for freedom today and every day, 6 days a week. And we're coming to you from the Patriot Mobile Communication Center right now. X Insurance brings it all to you. Support all of our partners that make these discussions possible every single day, please. These are the companies that keep us talking about these things. This is how we respond to the mainstream media nonsense. And my next guest does a great job of doing that, Stephen Gutowski, founder of The Reload. Stephen, welcome in. You know, I've got your picture on camera, and I love doing this. Underneath it, it has Stephen Gutowski, CNN contributor. And I'll flip that to The Reload at the next break. But I love that because it's a picture of you on Fox News. I do that intentionally because why not? Just because I can. How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing pretty good. I always enjoy a good joke like that. It's not bad.
Nobody ever says that stuff to you. I can't possibly be alone, am I? Tell me. Say it ain't so, please.
No, of course not.
Well, let's go over to The Reload. You guys do amazing work. Before we get started, tell us about The Reload, where people can – I guess, one of the original members over there. I'm proud of that. And I've watched you guys grow. It's just crazy. You're doing amazing work over there. But the media comes to you, and let's use their words, for common sense reporting on guns, Second Amendment issues, and gun rights, don't they?
Some of them do, right? I mean, sure, not everybody likes me, but I do my best to help whenever someone's reaching out in good faith for guidance or advice. You know, that's something I think is important and something I've always tried to do in my career.
How has CNN treated you?
You know, CNN has treated me really well. You know, it's one of those things where I think a lot of people there are eager to get the story right. And so that makes me happy working there with them. And, you know, I'm a contractor, so I'm not in the building all the time, but right. When I get to interact with reporters and hosts and producers, it's almost always been a positive experience, you know, and I think it's something I'm hoping to continue on and have more impact as we move forward. You know, always trying to, with big major media outlets, you know, there's certain patterns they fall into, I think, right? You see this across all big outlets where only certain kinds of stories get covered, and there's so much more going on, and I'm always trying to bring some of these undercovered stories into light there whenever I can, and I'm hoping to do more of that, you know, moving forward as well.
Yeah, that's great news. I tell you, because it's, of course, a narrative-driven, agenda-driven stuff, right? And we've seen it for years. You've seen it. I mean, you reported on it for years when you were with the Free Beacon. So I'm glad. I was damn proud of you when you got over there to CNN, because we need voices like yours out there. And I'm glad to hear that they're being fair to you, which is a good thing. And every report I've ever seen you done that you've done, I mean, have they ever told you not to talk about something, or do they let you go?
No. You know, it's certainly nothing like that. They don't try to tell me what to say or what I should think or anything of that sort. And in fact, they'll come to me for advice on stories, making sure they're getting identifying guns properly or using terminology right. I mean, you know, look, it's a big organization. There's going to continue to be mistakes, I'm sure, and that's something hopefully we can improve on in the future. And like I said, you know, I don't run CNN or anything like that. It's just I can give my input, and I do that whenever they ask for it, and I think that's positive.
It is positive. There's no question about it. Let's go over to a piece that Jake Fogelman has up over at your site, The Reload. And ladies and gentlemen, you can sign up over there at TheReload.com. It's like 10 bucks, and you get really good reporting. I mean really good reporting, reporting that other major media is looking at. But Jake has an analysis piece up from today, the felon in possession, SCOTUS collision course. Ooh, you know, we keep hearing, Stephen, that we're on a collision course with the Supreme Court in a number of different cases. Of course, the bump stock ban is there now. We know there's going to be an assault weapon ban case that's going to make it to the Supreme Court. Alan is confident in that. It likely looks like it's probably going to be a Maryland case, depending on the outcome. It looks like Maryland case may do that. But now felons in possession. What's going on here? What is Jake talking about in his piece?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the interesting things about Bruin, right, is that it set this new standard for how lower courts are supposed to decide Second Amendment cases, right? That was really the big news. Obviously, it also, you know, struck down New York's permanent, you know, concealed carry permitting scheme, and that was the most immediate thing. But it was the standard that really is going to have the impact, and you're seeing this already, right? And we've talked about it a lot, right, on the show here, and it's a broad impact across all kinds of things. But if, when you really look at what is gun control, or where we actually see gun crimes prosecuted, it really is mostly these the felon in possession bans. That's like 80% of federal prosecutions on gun crimes have to do with felon in possession crimes. And so you've seen a bunch of cases ever since Bruin came down that touch on this, because there's just so many of these cases, and Bruin makes the government have to go out of its way to defend the law. You can put the Bruin defense up as a public defender. It's just it doesn't require a lot of resources on your part. And so you've seen a ton of these cases, and they aren't coming down the same way, right? That's the key thing, is that they're coming down in all sorts of different ways and on all sorts of different details, right? We've talked before about Range, the case in Pennsylvania, where it was a nonviolent felon, somebody who had lied to get food stamps in the past and was then banned for life from owning guns. And, well, the Third Circuit says, hey, you know, this person is not violent. There's not a threat to themselves or others. Historically, they wouldn't have been banned from owning guns. And so this law can't stand under the Bruin standard, under the Second Amendment. But you've had a bunch of other states, a bunch of other circuits where they've held the opposite thing, right? They've held, well, these challenges don't work because there is a history banning dangerous groups of people from owning guns. And so felons fit under that category, according to some courts, regardless of what the crime was. And, so that's where you got this major disagreement in the lower courts on the thing that really is federal gun control. That's most of the charges you're going to see out there related to this. And so the court, you know, they're going to have to do something on this. You know, it's one of probably 100 different questions they're going to have to answer, but it's probably going to be one of the sooner ones.
Yeah, and Jake points out, well, so in his piece, again, ladies and gentlemen, it's at The Reload, the felon in possession SCOTUS collision course. It's a member exclusive. You have to be a member of The Reload to see this. But it's an interesting take. I like what he did here. On Tuesday, a three-judge panel for the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, just this past week, unanimously rejected a previously convicted drug trafficker's challenge to the federal ban on felons possessing firearms. The panel determined that the Supreme Court's New York State Rifle and Pistol Association v. Bruin, which is what Stephen is talking about, the latest case that came down on June 23rd of 2022, decision did not upset its precedent upholding the federal felony gun ban's validity. Now, take a listen to what they said. I found this interesting. Because the Supreme Court made it clear in Heller that its holding did not cast doubt on felon in possession prohibitions, and because the court made it clear in Bruin that its holding was, quote, in keeping with Heller, Bruin could not have clearly abrogated our precedent upholding Section 1 blank, the felon in possession. That was from Judge William Pryor, a George Bush appointee. And he said, indeed, the Bruin majority did not mention felons or that particular section, 922. Stephen, we're getting ready to take a break. When we come back, I want to address that, because this judge who wrote for that majority in that three-judge panel in the 11th Circuit went back to Heller. So I see, you know, is there a disconnect here? Let's go there when we come back from this break. Going back to Heller, how strong is Bruin in light of that from Heller that this judge pointed out, this George Bush appointee, Judge William Pryor? Is there a disconnect here? And could this be a problem for some of those people seeking to restore their gun rights who have been convicted of nonviolent felonies? Stephen Gutowski, CNN contributor and founder of The Reload, rejoins me for the final segment coming up right after this, 4 minutes from now. Don't go away.
Gallagher wanting to let you know that the crew of the Desperado Sport Fish in Virginia Beach, Virginia supports Armed American Radio and the Second Amendment, and I'm right there with them. Now back to Mark Walters.
Mike Gallagher, thanks for the rejoin, brother. We appreciate it. Car Firearms Group Studios on fire for you here. 6 hour Mike lit up. Patriot Mobile Communication Center, X Insurance presenting it all. Check out the website, patriotmobile.com/AAR. Use the promo code AAR when you flip your service from whatever woke company you're using to a company that supports your right to bear arms. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing, ladies and gentlemen. That's how we win this battle. We scratch each other's backs. We stand together. Patriotmobile.com/AAR. Use the AAR promo code and get free activation immediately. We are in the process of that at the ranch right now as we speak. And we are doing the same thing. Use that Patriot Mobile, at patriotmobile.com/AAR. Use that AAR promo code. Patriot Mobile, great company. Visit all of our partners at armedamericanradio.com or .org. We have you covered. Let's go back to Stephen Gutowski. Stephen, is there a disconnect here real quick? I don't want to spend too much more time on this because I want to get to you with Biden not pivoting. Clearly, you have a great piece up on that. Away from guns as we get closer to the election, that appears to be the case. And also I want to talk about, quote, to use your words, the meteoric rise of constitutional carry and get some predictions. But let's go back to that felon in possession. I found it interesting that the federal judge invoked Heller in light of the Bruin decision. What do you see going down here? How does this break?
Yeah, you've seen that a lot, actually, in the lower courts with these felon in possession cases. It's sort of a way to short circuit the analysis. You can kind of just say, well, the court said in dicta in Heller, so dicta is non-binding, right? So the court made some statements that Heller doesn't impact certain kinds of laws, and they haven't really said anything else about felon in possession laws other than those references. And so some courts have just said, well, you know, the court says it's not impacted, so we're not going to go through the rest of this, and we're just going to uphold the law. You've seen that pretty commonly to this point, so I'm not surprised by it. I don't know that it's I don't think once, you know, a case gets up to the Supreme Court that they're just going that they're going to do that. They're going to have to go through a full Bruin analysis, which will be, you know, honestly, it seems like you look at what happens in Rahimi. If we're going to make some predictions here, the case about domestic violence restraining order gun ban, that and then if they take up range and Daniels is another case that deals with, weed smoking and owning guns. And it seems like the court may at least has a path to where they might adopt a sort of dangerousness standard. People might have heard that talked about where it's like you have to show somebody is actually a danger to themselves or others before you can take their gun rights away. And that's that feels like where we're headed with these cases.
I agree.
But we don't know yet. Obviously, it's just a guess.
Yeah, it is a guess, but it's an educated guess and a good one. I think you're right. There's different degrees and levels of felonies. Is a guy who embezzled $2,000 or $3,000 or even $20,000 or $30,000 a dangerous threat to the community, particularly after he serves his sentence, right, and has lost his gun rights? And with the circuit splits that we have now, it's likely that this is going to go to the Supreme Court. Let's move over to Biden. Let's pivot quickly. You have a great piece up from March 8th, just 2 days ago. Biden won't tack to middle on guns as election rematch confirmed. Again, ladies and gentlemen, this is a member exclusive. So sign up at thereload.com. You'll thank me for that later, I promise. Great reporting. Stephen, normally we see a pivot by now or at least we expect to see a pivot by midsummer as we get closer to November. We've said many times on the show, and you and I have talked about it in the past on this broadcast, they're showing no signs of pivoting. In fact, it looks like they're doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down on going after guns, and the State of the Union was indicative of that as well. What's your take here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at the State of the Union, he said, I mean, he didn't say anything new necessarily, but that's kind of news in and of itself to me, mm-hmm. because he's still saying his top priority is an assault weapons ban, and a ban on AR-15s, right? A very popular firearm and lots of other firearms as well. Obviously, you know, people who listen to your show understand that the term is very fluid. It's not a, it encompasses a lot of guns, but the point is, you know, this is a pretty aggressive policy. It's more aggressive than what his, you know, when he was vice president, what President Obama was pushing for, which was the top priority was a universal background check, which technically doesn't ban any guns. And so now Biden is here. He's pushing for a much more aggressive policy with much less support from the public. I mean, now you have polls that show it's under 50% support for this. He's continuing to do that when traditionally in a lot of previous elections, you've seen the incumbent or, you know, once people get through the primary, they try to moderate a little bit more. And Biden is not taking that tact at all. And it's interesting because, one, he's trailing in the polling right now. And it sure looks like this is going to be yet another very close election. I mean, we had two very close elections previously, and it doesn't seem to be any reason to think right now that this won't be any different. And so people who are persuadable, you know, you might want to try to persuade them by being a little less aggressive on in some areas. At least that's the traditional theory of politics.
Historically speaking, that's what happens. We see no signs of that occurring in this election cycle. We've talked about it for the last 6 months. Usually you begin to see a pivot to the center, not just on guns, but on other issues as well. And it appears that the Democrats are going to double and triple down. In fact, during the State of the Union, Biden's actual statement was, and you have it here, I'm demanding a ban on assault weapons and high-capacity magazines. Here's my message to Joe Biden. Come and take it. Good luck with that. Stephen, I got to get a quick comment from you before we go. The ATF, Dettelbach, before we go to constitutional carry, did you happen to see the CBS Face the Nation piece?
I did, and it was not good reporting.
Well, tough to watch.
Was quite bad.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst kind of reporting to make, is it's you're interviewing, you're somebody who clearly, now this critique of the reporter more than the ATF, I guess, so that's my interest there. But she, you know, the reporter clearly doesn't know what she's talking about. She's not informed on the topic. That's pretty obvious for anybody watching who is informed. And she's using the ATF, or a law enforcement agency, as an expert when they have their own agenda in this. Like, they're defending their policies to her, but she's treating them as experts, as what they're saying is fact. And obviously what they're saying is the ATF's opinion of what's going on. It's not fact, it's disputed. And so, you know, to me, it's one of the worst kinds of interviews you can do.
Yeah, it was terrible. And they're being mocked deliberately, and I'm glad to see that. We're getting ready to end. We've got 30 seconds. Let's go to constitutional carry. We'll pivot to constitutional carry. Biden won't pivot, but we will. Wow, meteoric rise of constitutional carry. Are you shocked by it? Louisiana, then days later, hours later, South Carolina falls. It's a beautiful thing. Your take, real quick.
I mean, it's expected at this point because we've seen the momentum carry through. But if you look at it from the historical standpoint, it's been an incredible rise of this policy. I mean, it wasn't until 2003, before 2003, that Vermont was the only place that had this policy.
That's right.
And now, you know, we're what, 20 years later, and 29 states have it.
It's fantastic. And we'll likely see, I'm going to guess here, my prediction is you might likely see North Carolina go, particularly if the governor's race turns out the way I hope it does. North Carolina would fall. That would be 30. But yeah, it is fantastic. And ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard Stephen say about Vermont, so true. In fact, Stephen, as you remember, we used to refer to it as Vermont-style carry.
Vermont carry.
Right? Vermont carry. Stephen, thank you for everything that you do. We appreciate you being here very much. God bless you. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Gutowski, The Reload. You can also watch him talking common sense, real common sense, over at CNN as it pertains to your gun rights. He's educating them, and that's a beautiful thing. Stephen Gutowski, The Reload. Coming up in the next hour, the great Cam Edwards from Bearing Arms spends a solid hour with me. You're going to love it. Enjoy your break. See you in 6 minutes.
You've just filled your prescription for freedom with Mark Walters, presented by X Insurance.
X Insurance
on the Armed American Radio Network.